We're glad to be here with you tonight. And to us, it's a privilege to talk about homeschool and how it's been a blessing to us. As a beginning verse, I'd like to remind you of something that's said in Colossians chapter 2. Beware lest any man spoil you through philosophy and vain deceit, after the tradition of men, after the rudiments of the world, and not after Christ. For in him dwelleth all the fullness of the Godhead bodily, and you are complete in him, which is the head of all principality and power. I believe that one of the reasons that people are so infatuated with non-homeschool is because they have been spoiled through philosophy and empty deceit. Just to give a little background, in one sense, I was not a likely candidate to be a pioneer in homeschooling. I went to lots of schools myself. For the first 6 years, I went to a Christian school. For grade 7, I went to a public school. For grade 8, 9, and 10, I went to a Christian high school. For grade 11, I went to a public school. For grade 12, I went to a Christian boarding school. Then I spent a year at a Christian college. Then I spent a couple years at a secular college. And sometime later, I went to graduate school and worked on a PhD in math. And then I taught school for a while. And then later on, I went to some more school. And so to me, going to school was normal. It was the right thing to do. And Rhoda and I fully intended to send our children to school. But the Lord, in his mercy, propelled us into homeschool. There was no other reasonable choice. There was nothing else to do. It was the only sensible thing to do. We did not know anyone personally who was homeschooling. But we felt it was the right thing to do. So we did it anyway. You can imagine we caught some flack. But it's worth it. The flack is irrelevantly small compared to what the benefits are. In fact, when we began homeschooling, I told Rhoda, I said, now some of your relatives will talk about how many beans they've canned, how much corn they put up on certain days and stuff like that. I said, I don't want you to worry about it. This stuff is more important than putting up beans and corn. And, you know, even though I prefer homegrown beans and homegrown corn, I like it better. It tastes better. That is not as important as getting this other done. I think that's important, especially as people begin homeschooling, because it's a sudden shift and involves big responsibility, and you better relieve some of the pressure somewhere. So go to the Bent and Dent store and eat canned beans instead of growing them, if that's what it takes, so that you have more time to think. Thinking is important, by the way. You know, one of the things that we find out as we began to homeschool, I will say this, the Lord propelled us into homeschool, and our main reason for homeschooling was for academic reasons. Just to give you an example of what happened, our oldest daughter she learned to read very early. And, you know, Rhoda didn't think she was going to teach her how to read so early, but she was interested in making words on the refrigerator with letters. So anyway, she taught her how to read, and she learned to read very early. And I remember one time someone asked her, when did you learn to read? She said, I always knew how. The reason she said that was she cannot remember not knowing how to read. Anyway, so she was a fluent reader, and I got to thinking about, what am I going to do with this child at 6 years old and they can read this fluently? We thought about this, we thought about that. We lived in the Washington, D.C. area at the time. And we thought, well, maybe we could send her to an ACE type school, because then she could proceed at her own rate and she could be with this class. We talked to the officials and they said, no, we'll make her go through all these paces. She's got to go through them all. Well, I knew that would be a killer. There would be nothing that would destroy a child's desire for learning more than that kind of stuff. The other possibility would be to send her to a Christian school that was 45 minutes away in rush hour traffic. So my wife would have to drive through Washington rush hour traffic 45 minutes, drive 45 minutes home, drive 45 minutes, pick her up, drive 45 minutes home. Well, that amounts to 3 hours, doesn't it? That doesn't sound too good. You just, well, if you spent those 3 hours teaching, how much could you get done? Besides, I knew my wife was a good teacher. Why should I send this child off somewhere else so that she could learn from somebody else? And, of course, I was not interested in sending the child to public school. And so what I tell people sometimes is God in his mercy propelled us into homeschool, even though that was not our natural inclination. And, you know, our basic reason was an academic reason. But, you know, it wasn't but just a few weeks after we began homeschooling that we found it had many advantages far beyond the academic advantages. So sometimes people get discouraged, or sometimes people are wondering what they should do. Tonight we're going to talk about what some of these advantages are of homeschooling. Maybe some of you have pressure from some of your relatives who think, well, you're not treating your children right. You're not training them properly. You're not setting them up to be good citizens of this world. Well, don't worry. If you homeschool properly, it will be a better job than if you send them off somewhere. Deuteronomy 6 talks about teaching your children when you sit down, when you rise up, when you walk by the way. Who is he talking about doing the teaching there? He's not talking about some school somewhere that you're sending him to. He's talking about the father and the mother doing it. That's who he's talking about. The first thing we notice in terms of the superiority of home education is that it has a spiritual superiority. And one of the reasons that it's spiritually superior is because children get their values from their parents instead of from their peers. If you send your child to school, I don't care whether it's a public school or a Christian school, you will have them sitting in a pool of ignorance called their peer group. And that's where they're going to get a lot of their values. Well, so-and-so-and-so has this. So-and-so thinks that. They do it this way. They're going to get their values there. You know, that's an abysmal disadvantage for having your child get his value systems from 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13-year-olds instead of from you, the parents, who have some spiritual maturity and some wisdom. And so as a parent, since you are handing out the value system, he will absorb your values as you teach him and as you live it. You can't be teaching one thing and living something else. But as you teach it and live it, he will begin to absorb your values, not the values of his peers. And you can teach him that right is normal. You see, we have lived in a subnormal manner for so long that many people, when you begin to approach normal, they think it's abnormal. For example, I believe that we should be polite. And so in our house, you know, it's pass the milk, please. Butter, please. Not, give me the beans. Meat. Now I remember that one time Rhoda was speaking with Rochelle when she was about 10 years old. And Rochelle said, why was it easier to teach Rolanda to say please than it was the rest of us who were too proud to do it? Well, that's an interesting observation, isn't it? Did you ever notice that often a small child will refuse to say please as a matter of pride? You say, would you like a piece of candy? Say please. They don't want to acknowledge you as the giver. And so they refuse to say please, even if it costs them the candy. So there was an element of truth to that. But Rhoda said, well, maybe it's that Rolanda has heard the word please so often that she thinks it's part of the word. And it was interesting to notice that as her speech developed, that supposition was shown to be true. Because Rolanda said, Milkies! And then, when she learned what please meant, she said, Milkies, please! You see what happened there? Hard work with an older child paid off automatic dividends with a younger one. And so you see, the child is learning that right is normal. So when he gets into situations, it doesn't sound right not to be polite. Another way you can get values from parents instead of from your peers, you know, if you homeschool, your child doesn't mind getting clothes that come from the Goodwill. If you send a child off to school, he comes home and he wants a certain kind of clothes with a certain tag in the back. A great advantage in terms of not sending your child away to school and learning values from the parents instead of the peers, he doesn't learn a lot of rubbish behind the washroom door that has to be unlearned. That is a significant area. And that happens in Christian schools, I guarantee it. You know, a lot of people have no idea what goes on in some of those places. So, having your child have his values from his parents instead of from his peer group is an incredible, significant advantage. Another way this is spiritually superior is that you as the parent have complete control of the curriculum. You know, if you send your child to public school, he's going to have a curriculum that's saturated with evolution, for example. Or witchcraft. Some of the books that are being used in public school actually promote elements of witchcraft. Or they promote elements of distrust of your parents. Or they promote elements of immorality in terms of same-sex marriages and all kinds of things. You know, there's all kinds of things that get put into the curriculum that you have no control over as a parent. Incidentally, that lack of control also occurs in the Christian school. The school board decides what books are going to be used, and if there's deficiencies in certain areas, you're stuck with what has been decided. But you know, as a parent, you get a book and you think this is going to be a great book, and you start to use it, and then in the process of using it, you find some things that are a problem. You can say, well, sorry, I spent $20 or $30 for this book. Out it goes. I'm getting something else. And that $20 or $30 is a small price to pay for getting something that really works. Another way that homeschool is spiritually superior is that it enables you to identify problems and deal with them while they are simple. You know what happens at school? You have a classroom, and the teacher simply does not have time to deal with all the problems that are happening out there in that classroom. Besides, most of the parents wouldn't want them dealt with anyway. I say that as an experienced teacher. They want to believe that their child is little Johnny Angel the Second. They forgot there are two classes of angels, good ones and bad ones. So not only are things going on sometimes in the classroom the teacher may not see, but what about on the playground? There are things going on. And that child of yours could be a little bully towards somebody else in the playground, and the teacher doesn't necessarily know it. But what happens if your child is a little bully at home? You know it. And you can deal with it while it's easy to deal with. What about if your child is more of the timid type and easily is swayed by the pressure of someone else? You see, you might not know what kind of pressures he's bending to at school, on the playground or wherever. But at home, you know what kind of problem he has, that he is easily swayed, and so you can help fortify him and overcome that natural weakness. Identify with these problems early while they're simple. We've talked to people who say, oh, I could never homeschool because my child and me are too much alike. We clash too much. Now, that's a bad reason for not homeschooling. In fact, if that's your reason, you better homeschool. Because you better get this ironed out now while it's easy instead of waiting until they're 16 and having your clash. Incidentally, that relates to another advantage spiritually of having homeschool. And that is that by having homeschool, you have many more interactions with your child than you would if you're sending them off to school. That's just a natural fact. If you send your child off to school, he's gone 6 or 7 or so hours a day. And so that block of time is missing. Whereas if you're homeschooling, he's interacting with whom? His parents. And so those interactions form bridge points that are a bigger platform to deal with later crises. probably many of you who grew up in the generation that thought going to school was the normal thing, as I did, many of you appreciated your first grade teacher a lot. Is that true? Okay. Now, when you were 16 and going through some kind of crisis, where was that first grade teacher? Not a bit of help, right? What if you'd been homeschooled through grade 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and you're 16? Then what? Your teachers that you appreciated are there to help you. It's a great advantage. Another spiritual advantage of homeschool is it provides flexibility for ministry. Now, as I told you, we did not begin homeschooling in order to have a flexible schedule for ministry. We were propelled into homeschooling for academic reasons. But in the process of time, as the Lord opened up this traveling ministry that we do, homeschool works in perfectly. It's not a disruption. We just take our school books along. Sometimes people wonder, how in the world do we manage? Because, like, for example, we might be gone on a trip for 2 or 3 months at a time. Then in September, we're leaving about the 2nd of September. We're going out through the West. We'll be at somewhere between 20 and 30 churches. Get back mid or later November. Well, you know, as we do that, the academic part does slow down sometimes. We can't go as fast a pace. But in the process of doing that kind of thing, guess what? There's compensating educational going on. Our children have a vast geographical education in the process. And we also interact with lots of people from lots of backgrounds, lots of different churches, lots of different situations, get into lots of homes, learn how to do things in various kind of ways. In fact, my oldest daughter, who's in Nigeria as a Wycliffe Bible translator, she says being on the road in the United States is great training for the mission field. Why? Because what happens is things happen you don't expect. Things don't turn out the way you planned. Things, you go to somebody's house and they fix a wonderful meal but it has dog hair in it. You know, various kind of things happen. And so you learn to compensate. You learn to go on. You don't let that kind of thing get you down. Okay, how is homeschool superior in other ways? Not only is it superior spiritually, it is also academically superior. How many of you learned to love history because you went to school and took history courses? Not very many. Why? I know what it was like when I went to school. Every year, we'd start out with Columbus and Magellan and those fellas. And we'd go plodding through the explorations of the North America and South America and Bolivar and all this stuff. Get into the Revolutionary War and talk about various things and finally get up to about the Civil War. And by then the school year was over. And guess what? The next year, back to Magellan again. Oh, it was such a drag. And you have all these dates and the Dred Scott decision. You still dread it, don't you? I mean, what was the Dred Scott decision? I mean, it had something to do with leading up to the Civil War, but what in the world was it? You have all these dates and all this stuff, and it's just like, oh my, it makes you tired. You know how you can make history interesting? Not by making a person go through a history book with all kinds of dates and facts and repeating all this stuff, but by exposing children to stories of people who actually lived and did things and affected our world. For example, some years ago, Rhoda read The Hiding Place by Corrie ten Boom to the children. And the two oldest girls would have been, I don't know, 8 or 10 years old. They were so interested in this story that they decided to write a novel about Jews fleeing from Hitler during World War II. Now, if you're going to write a novel about Jews fleeing from Hitler during World War II, what do you have to do? You have to learn a lot of things. So they went to the library and checked out books about World War II. And so they were learning things about the military operations, about prisoner of war camps, about the Jews, about all kinds of things, escapes from prisons. They became World War II buffs in the process. Now, as they were writing this story, you can imagine an 8-year-old or 10-year-old writing a story about World War II. They write it in their own immature fashion, And then after they'd get a bunch of chapters written, as the months would go by, they'd go back and look at the other stuff. They'd, man, that wasn't realistic. You know? But what are they doing? They're learning this mass of historical material. Well, then you ask them, what do you think led to World War II? Oh, it was the Treaty of Versailles. Treaty of Versailles at the end of World War I, where Germany was forced to pay reparations. Well, what led to World War I? And guess what? You don't have to memorize all kinds of things. When you read history like that, when did World War II start? Well, Hitler marched into Poland, September 1939. It's not like you sat down, I got to memorize this, but by having read all this interesting stuff, it falls into place. And then after you read that kind of thing, you can give them a history book and say, all right, now this will give you a framework to stick these chunks in. Well, I remember one of the issues in World War II was the appeasement of Hitler. You know how that the British wanted to give Hitler Czechoslovakia? Sure, he can have that. We don't care about them. That didn't satisfy Hitler, did it? He wanted more to gobble up. Well, guess what? This background was a very interesting background then when Saddam Hussein marched into Kuwait. What do you suppose? Do you think Saddam Hussein would have been content just to have Kuwait? Do you see how this begins to fit history together? It becomes very interesting. All of our children like history. Another way that academic advantage, I should say this. One of the academic advantages of homeschool is you can teach the joy of learning. You see, if you approach history that way, then it's interesting. It's intrinsically interesting. It's fun to learn. It's not, you mean I got to get my history book out? Another advantage is that you can tailor this to individual needs. That means that you can work with slower students or gifted students without so much a feeling of inferiority or superiority. For example, let's suppose you have a child that's very bright, and then another child comes along that isn't quite as bright. But the second child is younger anyway. So the older one should know more than the younger one. And if the older one is very bright, well, then give them more and more stuff to learn. Make them learn faster and faster. And they don't know that they're actually learning four grades ahead of their level. They don't have to know that. They don't have to worry about that. You just make them go as fast as they can. Maybe they know they're two grades ahead of their ordinary level, but it's just that they just figure you're pushing them. That's fine. You don't have to worry about that. What about the person that's slower? You take more time and you spend more time with him to help him get over the hump. I remember when I was in college, a mathematics professor said to me one day, he said, Ray, sitting in class is the waste of a smart person's time. I have pondered that many times, and that is really true. It is so true, because if you have 30 people and you're trying to teach them this certain subject, what are you doing most of the time? Sort of steering down through the middle. You know, you got to take the middle guy and hope to drag the slow one along and not to bore the other fellow too much. It's one of the great advantages of homeschool. You have one child that's really sharp and quick to catch on. You just take them as fast as they can go. Somebody else that can't catch on quite as fast, take them a little slower. Go over it a few more times. And that means, as a homeschooler, you can deal with significant problems. For example, one of the big problems that people love to talk about in educational circles these days is dyslexia. Have you ever heard that? You know, where people turn the letters around and they turn the words backwards and stuff, and how terrible this is, and they put in special education and so on. You know what? If you have a child like that and you send them off to regular school, they end up being labeled as dumb. That's about what it amounts to. But at home, especially if you start early, you can actually see that thing happening, and then you spend extra work with this child to help them overcome that. And they don't necessarily know that they have dyslexia. They don't know that they've got some kind of labeled problem. You know, some of these things get labeled onto a person, and then they become self-perpetuating. Another way you can tailor a homeschool to individual needs is you can capitalize on special interests or gifts. When we lived in Indiana, we lived near a Christian college. And I knew one of the professors there who was a professor of French. He had a little class that he would teach children French. Now, personally, I would have sort of preferred that my children learn Spanish because I figured there are more Spanish speakers in the world than French speakers. It'd be more useful. But that's what was available, and so the three oldest children would go to this little class where he was teaching them French. And after about a year of this, I approached him and I said, you know, with Rochelle, she would have been about 11. I said, I would like if she could come and sit in your college French class and just see what she could learn, just as an experiment. He said, yeah, I'd like that. He said, we won't even tell the administration. That's just a deal between you and me. So that's what we did. She went to French class. He was a little afraid I was pushing her too hard, but I knew I wasn't because I had tutored her in New Testament Greek already. And anyway, it was interesting to watch what happened. She went to this French class, and she was 11 years old, and here were these college students. But, you know, she accepted them. They accepted her. And took her a little time to catch her stride. You know, a 10-year-old can't write near as fast as a college student can. But that didn't worry me too much. Anyway, she soon caught her stride and had a good time. In fact, one day after class, she said to a couple college girls, what are you going to do when you grow up? And they burst out laughing. You see, here was a child who was learning French at their level, but she was still thinking like a child. Anyway, it was a great experience. She did that for a couple of years. And just imagine now if you'd sent your child to a regular school to get permission from the administration for her to get out of these other classes that are very important so she could walk over to this college and take this college French class, and not even take it for credit, just take it, just be there, no guarantee of anything. Well, if we let this child do that, somebody else is going to want to go over here to do something else, and somebody else is going to want to do this, or our system will just be humping at the seams. We'll have too many administrative problems. No, I think we better not. But you see, because we were homeschooling, we could take advantage of a special situation that was unique. And you know, one of the ways the Lord used that, when she was 18, she went to Africa to be with a Wycliffe couple to learn something about Bible translation. This Wycliffe couple lived in Côte d'Ivoire, which has a national language of French. And so she could walk right in, she knew the national language to start with, and she could focus on learning the tribal language right away. Another way that homeschool is academically superior is that it involves the effective use of time. You know, one of the things that I detest about normal school is busy work. Oh, it's so full of it. You know, we got to make a test to differentiate between the A's, B's, C's, and D's. So we make out this test. And here's this book. You learn this stuff on this page so that you can write it down on this paper so I can check it off so I can give you a letter grade. It's busy work. If you homeschool, you don't have to give many tests because you know what's going on. I remember I was in a school situation one time and I just felt like these people gave me so much homework to do that I didn't have time to think. So much busy work. Listen, we want our children to learn how to think. It isn't going to be important, you know, 15 years from now if they can recite a whole set of certain dates. But what is going to be important, can they understand the foolish decisions that were made in the 1830s that led up to the Civil War that could have been avoided? Can they understand that kind of thing? That's going to be significant. And can they articulate it? And then can they take that understanding and say, okay, what kind of similar foolishnesses are going on today, either in the national scene, international scene, or in church life, that illustrate the same kind of fallacies that we ought to be alert to? You see, if you have home school, you don't have to give your child busy work. You know whether he knows the material or not. And so you don't need to give a lot of tests, but sometimes it's not a bad idea to give some tests, to give them practice taking tests, because they get into other situations where they need to take some tests. Also, of course, if you're in a regular school situation and you understand the material and you got 3/4 of an hour yet while the lecture is going on, what are you doing? Basically, you're wasting your time. Whereas if at home, you look at the page, you understand the material, you do your homework. Look at all the time you're saving. If you only need a 5-minute explanation, then that's all they need to have. And when you have that kind of situation, it gives the child time to develop his own creative interests. You see, don't put them in a situation where they have so much busy work they don't have time to think. Put them in a situation where they can learn quickly and then use their creativity to develop other things. Homeschool is academically superior because it's a great environment for developing skill in independent study. You know, if you try to run your school like a traditional classroom, you're going to drive yourself batty, and you'll drive your children batty too. It's not that you sit there for 6 hours in the day giving lectures. What you're doing is you develop independent study. You show them, here's how you do this. Here's what this means. Now get busy and do it, and if you have a question, come to me and ask me about it. So you become a tutor. And incidentally, what our goal is, work ourselves out of a job as quick as we can. We'll talk more about that tomorrow. Another academic advantage of homeschool is that you can adjust the curriculum whenever necessary. You realize this book is deficient, and maybe you have a book that was really good. Child number one ate it up and just went fine. And then child number two comes along and they just can't make sense out of this thing. What do you do? You say, well, child number one learned this out of this. You better learn it too. You might say, somehow we're having a problem here. We'll keep this book because obviously it's good for one child. Let's go get another book. Maybe we'll help them in this weak point. You see, you can adjust that thing. And of course, homeschool is superior because what is the student-teacher ratio? A lot better than most schools. It's superb. And incidentally, who loves this child more, the mother or some school teacher down the road? Should be obvious, shouldn't it? Sometimes parents worry, well, I'm just not a very good teacher. I mean, you know, I know of so-and-so, and they're such a good teacher. Maybe I could send them to that school. Let me ask you this question. How many of you have gone to school and sat under some worthless teachers? Anybody? If you haven't, you're an unusual audience. Now, as a homeschooling parent, you can probably be better than that worthless teacher, can't you? You see, if you send your child off to school, I almost guarantee you he will sit under some teachers that aren't worth going to. In fact, it's interesting to notice Luke chapter 6, verse 40. The student becomes like his teacher. It doesn't say he becomes like what his teacher teaches, but it says that he becomes like his teacher. And of course, a disadvantage of the regular school is that often children in that environment are stigmatized and characterized as dumb. You know, it's difficult enough if you don't understand something, but then if you are sort of given the flavor that you are a dummy, that's a heavy weight to carry. And now we come to another advantage of homeschool, and that is that homeschool is socially superior to other methods of education. This is the most common question that we get. But what about their social development? Thank you very much. I like the question and I like the answer. It is far superior to other methods. Why? One is because in a homeschool environment, you learn servanthood. Now, in a homeschool situation, if the children go outside to play tag, and let's say you have 5 children, so their ages range from 11 to 2 or whatever, how's this game going to work? If the oldest child runs as fast as they can, what's going to happen to the game? What'll happen? Won't be any fun, will it? So you've got to gauge your participation according to the abilities of the other ones. Now, which is more fun? Is it more fun to escape from a two-year-old, or is it more fun to see the joy on his face when he finally catches you? Which is it? It's pretty obvious, isn't it? Or if a little two-year-old is running and you're going to catch him, you have to do it carefully or you'll knock him over. You see what happens? The fellowship of the game becomes more important than the game. Isn't that something that some adults need to learn? Incidentally, I'm not opposed to church ball games if you'd have them that way. I'm not talking about ball teams, but get together and let's have the 50-year-olds and the 6-year-olds on the same team. What happens when homeschoolers get together to play ball? Have you ever watched this? Did you ever go to a family reunion where people send their child off to school? What happens in those places? The 16, 18, 20, 24, 26, 28-year-old boys, they say, get those little kids out of here. They're ruining our game. Now, if you have a homeschool situation, what happens? They're all playing there together. So when the 6-year-olds turn to bat, somebody comes, helps him hold the bat. Pitcher comes into 9 feet and pitches the nicest, easy pitch he can pitch. And hit it. So they help him hit it. He goes dribble, dribble, dribble. They say, run. Get on first base. What's going on? The fellowship of the game is the important thing. Can't we learn that? You know, if you send your child off to school, he doesn't learn that. Then he wants everybody to be the same age, same size. I can't play with that guy. He's a little guy. He's only 1 year younger. Not only that, servanthood in terms of watching out for the weaker ones. You know, if your children are homeschooled and they're going to play this ball game, what are the older ones going to do? They'll watch out that the little one doesn't get hit with a bat when somebody's throwing it down. You know, it's the kind of thing where you teach the older ones to watch out for the younger ones. And also in terms of servanthood, you see, socially superior, servanthood. If you homeschool, your child has time to contribute to the family. If you send your child away to school, he will spend 6 or 7 or 8 hours at school, then he'll come home with homework yet to do, and he will not make much contribution to the family. It becomes the parasitism of the school. It's socially superior because it eliminates foolish peer pressure. We talked about that a little bit. Peer pressure in terms of designer clothes. Peer pressure in terms of participation in sin. Peer pressure in terms of participation in non-positive activities. You know, so many people say, well, what's wrong with that? What did Apostle Paul say? All things are lawful to me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. In other words, maybe I could do this, but I'm not going to get involved in something that will enslave me. All things are lawful unto me, but all things don't edify. So I'm not going to be involved in things that aren't building up to the people around me. All things are lawful unto me. And he gave another thing there. I forget what it is right now. You see, if you send your child off to school, you're going to find that he's going to have foolish peer pressure to not only do bad things, but to do non-positive things. Your child will also experience probably the brunt of unkindness. Ha! You've got a big nose! There goes big nose! Have you ever been in school and felt the brunt of that? I know what that's like as a child. Or how about being no good at a ball game? That was me. You know, I'd hit the ball wrong or I wouldn't hit it. I'd strike out or something, you know, and I was always picked up nearly last. There's a lot of pressure there. Or how about somebody being called a dummy? Another social superiority of homeschool is that it's an opportunity to build family relationships. You can work out personal clashes between parents and children and between children and children. Because you're there right with it. You can see it happening when it's little. You can deal with it. Another way family relationships are built is that moving does not mean changing schools and losing your best friends. Because your best friends are who? Your brothers and sisters and your parents. That's a great advantage. You know, we've moved a fair amount, lived in various locations. We lived in New York City. We lived in Indiana. And if we would move, if I would say someday, children, I think the Lord wants us to move to Argentina. what do you think they'd say? Oh, come on. I don't think they'd say that. They'd say, really? You can ask them, I guess. But you see, homeschool enables you to do some of these other things without disrupting the life of the child. You know, if you send your child off to school, it will automatically introduce pressure for fragmenting the family. Automatically. Because this one has to be involved in that activity, and this one has to be involved in this activity, and this one, and this one, and this one, and this one. Incidentally, sometimes people get trapped into this with their homeschool activities where they want to have, you know, this kind of singing group and this kind of this and this kind of that. I'm not saying some of that can't be done. I think some of it is useful at times. But remember, what are you trying to accomplish? Another reason that homeschool is socially superior is because it enables an interaction with wide span of ages. Homeschool children are used to interacting with children that are several years younger or children that are older. They don't have everybody the same age and the same size. And so if you homeschool your children and do it properly, your children don't mind talking to 60-year-olds and 30-year-olds and 10-year-olds, and they love to be able to go to church and hold the baby, you know, whatever. That broad kind of social interaction is something that is a blessing through homeschool that you see a contrast to in ordinary school where, well, you and we're going to visit those people? They don't have any children my age. That's an irrelevant point. It's totally irrelevant. If you homeschool, it's irrelevant. Well, there might be someone there that can say something interesting. Or maybe there's somebody there that's 8 years younger than you are. You can go there and show them a good time. And of course, one of the aspects of this social advantage is that you can control your child's friends naturally. If you send your child off to school, you just dump them off, and they're going to pick their friends, and some of the friends they pick are not going to be good. That's just how it works. They're going to be drawn away, some of them. Now, some of them won't. You know, some children are stalwart by nature, and it's like, well, I don't care what those people think. You know what I'm doing. I know this is the right course, and I'm going that way, and they can just do what they want. But many children aren't that way, and they'll be drawn aside by foolishness. You have no control over that. You're sitting at home, and their child is off at school. But if you homeschool, you can help them learn to have their brothers and sisters be their best friends, and also you can choose their friends in a very natural way. What is it? Well, let's say there's this family over here that's spiritually minded after God. They're training their children to be righteous. They're training to be obedient and helpful and honor their parents. There's this family over here that they may be in the church. They might be church members, but they don't have the same goals you have. So what do? You go visit that family, and you interact with that family. And those children learn to play with those children. They learn to do those kind of things. And so you naturally choose their friends just by virtue of choosing which set of parents you spend more time with. So in answer to the question, when someone says, aren't you concerned about their social development? Say, yes, I am. That's why I homeschool. What about some practical superiority? One of the ways homeschool can be valuable is that you can have projects of enduring value. You know, this thing of busy work in school is something that sort of rankles me. Doing these old projects that don't amount to anything. I'll give you an example in terms of a project of enduring value. Some years ago, two of our daughters prepared a little book on church history. Three missionary stories, true stories. One about how the people over in Burma got the Bible, led to a white missionary by a little pony. One about Adoniram Judson, Burma, and one about Sadhu Sundar Singh. And they were 16 and 18 years old when they were doing that. They drew pictures for this and made it into a little book. Well, that was a lot of work, but when you're done, you have something that has value, and it's not only useful to your own family, it's useful to other people. When Roland was about 12 years old, he was as a project, he made a little wooden train, toy train, which he gave to his younger siblings as a Christmas present. And he took pieces of wood and used hand tools to shape these things. He bought the wheels somewhere, but then used hand tools. It was a good project. And I told him, you know, I want him to draw on a piece of paper how he's going to do this before he cuts his wood. So you see, he can think about how's it going to be and why would it be better to do it this way instead of this way. You know, one way it's also superior in a practical way is that it enables you to get more done. Ladies, especially, did you hear that? Homeschool enables you to get more done. Now, you know, we began homeschooling and there wasn't near the material out for homeschooling back then as it is today. It wasn't nearly as popular then as it is today. And we lived in Indiana and our children were supposed to take achievement tests at the local public school. And many of the teachers at that particular school were Christians and they told us, look, you know, your children can just stay for the whole day. That's fine. And so we thought, well, that'd be interesting for them to get an experience of seeing what ordinary school is like. And Rhoda thought, this week, I'm going to get a lot done. Well, after a couple of days, she couldn't wait till that week was over. Because you know how the week went? You rush around in the morning to get your child ready and then haul them off to school. And then you come back, and if the baby needs to be entertained, Rhoda does it. All the housework, Rhoda does it. And then these children have to be picked up. They're brought home, and they've been cooped up in school all day. And so she felt like, I can't just give them work to do. Let them go out and run off some steam. So who's fixing supper? Rhoda's fixing supper by herself. And then you have devotions. And then it's time to get them off the bed so they can get a good rest, so they can think clear the next day, so you can rush them off to school, so they can take their tests, so you can go through this routine again. And guess what? You don't have time. They don't have time to develop their creative interests. They don't have time to explore. You know, during that time, they weren't developing their creative interests. They were just going to school. And Rhoda couldn't get her regular stuff done. Another practical advantage of homeschool is that you escape the germ pool. You know what school is? It is Germ Distribution Center. You ever seen that work? You know, we didn't start homeschool for that reason. But after we were homeschooling a while, we noticed, you know something? Our children aren't near as sick as other people in the church. You know why? Because we didn't send them to the Germ Distribution Center. I mean, here's little Johnny, and he has the measles, but nobody knows it yet. You know, so he's wiping his face and talking to his friends and giving them a bite out of the sandwich or whatever. And so he's spreading measles all over the place. And then, you know, and then the child that he spread it to, he goes home, spreads it to his brothers and sisters. I mean, it's a distribution center. Well, you escape some of that if you don't send your child to those places. And, of course, in terms of practical things, one of the advantages of homeschool is it saves money. I mean, the wife can stay home and teach the children instead of earning money to send children to Christian school. You know, that's a trap some people get into. Well, we couldn't afford sending our children to Christian school unless my wife worked, and we definitely don't want to send them to public school. We understand that. So my wife has to work so that we can have more money so that we can send our child to Christian school. It's also cheaper in terms of you don't need to carpool. I mean, you know, what about snow days? Of course, you don't have snow days down here anyway, do you? But anyway, you know what I'm talking about. I mean, if the weather is inclement, you just have school anyway. You just walk into the next room. Have school. So you see, homeschool has a lot of advantages. You know, it's spiritually superior. It's academically superior. It's socially superior. It's practically superior. But, you know, even so, some people have objections. How about this one? Well, my church has a school, and we want to support its ministry. Let me ask you, if your church had an orphanage, would you want to support its ministry by sending your child there? Someone else may object. I don't know enough to teach my child. Well, begin when they're little. Teach your child how to read. Anybody can teach elementary school. I mean, elementary school is by its very nature very what? Elementary. And then, of course, you can learn and learn ahead of them. And you need to marshal your children to teach you. I have some children that know more about World War II than I do. But we can have great discussions about aspects of World War II. You can capitalize on special opportunities, just like I was telling you. You know, this situation arose where Rochelle could go and learn this French class. Well, in homeschool, I don't know French. I mean, maybe I could get a book and learn how to conjugate some of it, but I wouldn't have a good accent. I remember my father went to high school, and he took French way back then. And one time as a boy, I asked him, say something in French. He said, De Gaulle. Incidentally, for you who are later on here, De Gaulle was a French leader. But, you know, in a sense, I feel about like that in terms of learning French. Well, here this special situation arose that I could capitalize on something else where she could learn that. Or someone might say, I don't have time. You know what? Everybody has the same amount of time, 24 hours a day, and we do what we want to do with that time. Evidently, if you don't have time, you don't think the education of your child is really that important. And like I said, home education saves time. You don't have wasteful carpools. You don't have ridiculous busy work. You have time for your child to help with household chores. And you can marshal your children into being a contributor in the family so you have time to concentrate on what they can't do. Someone else is going to say, well, not everybody can teach their children. Now listen. If God has given you children, you will teach them. You're teaching them something. By virtue of your position as a parent, you're either teaching them this is important and this isn't, or you're teaching them something else. And by the way, do you need to have a PhD in nutrition to teach your child how to prepare a delicious meal? Do you need a PhD in tire engineering to teach your child how to change a tire? You know, there are lots of things that you can teach your child. And like I said, elementary education is very elementary. You might like to study Deuteronomy 6, which I think is a mandate for parents. If you claim you can't do it, talk to God about it. See what he says. Now, I will say this. There might be exceptional circumstances where a parent would not teach homeschool. For example, let's suppose that one of the spouses dies in July. It may be that that year they wouldn't homeschool. Or I've thought about this. We lived in New York City for a while, and what if somebody's converted off the street in May? Do you suppose they're going to be ready to homeschool in September? You see, there are special circumstances. But I believe one of the things that churches ought to be doing, if they want to have a school, is to use it as a ministry point where we're not going to keep this as a babysitting session. We are here to help you learn how to teach your child, and we are not intending to keep your child very long, not many years. We want you to come here and learn some things about this, and our job is to get rid of this job. And so have it as a ministry where you're reaching out to people that have lots of other problems that need solved first before they actually are able to move into doing homeschooling. You know, if you have a convert off the streets of New York, they have a lot of other things that need to be worked out more than the homeschooling issue. But at the same time, if they're a believer, you wouldn't want to say, well, send yours to public school New York City. Maybe there would be a case of providing something in a church kind of way. So I think there could be exceptional circumstances where temporarily it would be better not to homeschool. But I think the focus should be a realization that those circumstances are temporary. Someone might ask, well, what if we only have one child? Then maybe we should send the child to school for his social development. Well, when everyone would raise that question, it's obvious that the primary issue at hand is the socialization. All the other factors apply regardless of how many children you have. In other words, is it spiritually superior? Yes. Academically superior? All those things. So the issue is socialization. And we have been fed a false notion that the only way that socialization can happen is through this childhood peer school situation. That's not true. Socialization can happen through adults. What did people do 100 years ago? They moved out into the West as pioneers and took their children with them and lived in isolation, if you want to call it that, and carved a homestead out of the wilderness. And they raised some children that could get on in life, didn't they? But what do we have? Since the 50s, we have this generation, or couple generations, that have been raised on this wonderful socialization machine called school, and guess what we have? Misfits in society. I mean, just examine the output. It's not impressive. Don't ever be bamboozled by the notion that because you have an only child that you got to send him to school so he can be socialized. That's not true. He can be socialized by the parents and by the parents interacting with other families. So that gives you a little overview of some of the reasons why I believe homeschool is a great blessing. And I'm here to say that we have always had homeschool. It's been a great blessing to us. And I've told people already, if there was a Christian school right beside my house and they didn't charge any tuition, we would still have homeschool. Now, maybe someone has some comments or questions. Anyone? Okay, the question is, how can you tell between what is busy work and what's important? So many of the phonics rules and so on in the early grades. We try to steer away from a lot of workbooks, fill in the blanks. In the early grades, we don't take them through science books or history books. I think you can't. It is useful to have some phonics rules where you're learning the simple sounds. But when you get really complicated with it, it tends to overburden a little child. You know, you can give them the simple basic sounds, and that helps them catch on to reading. But then if you get really technical about diphthongs and all kinds of stuff that, you know, maybe a linguist would worry about, then you're going to burden the child down with stuff he doesn't even need to worry with. Maybe Rhoda will address that more tomorrow. Do you want to comment on that?
On that particular point, there definitely are phonics programs which I feel burden the child down and take them in too much detail. And there are phonics programs which have the basics, and you give that to a child and they can run with it. And if they need to know that other stuff, they can open a dictionary and see it, you know. And so that's the approach we use. Get a simple program that teaches them basics, what they need to know. And then if they have to know all that other, all those exceptions and all those rules, you know, I mean, they can just look at a dictionary and it will tell them.
Anything else? Okay, the question is, how do you rekindle interest in children who've been burned out by, I guess, run through the mill of standard textbooks and so on? Well, just take the history example. Instead of taking them through a history book, find a well-written book on the life of Abraham Lincoln and read it to them. You know, maybe they aren't good readers. Read it to them. If they're good readers, say, read this. There's a lot of, for example, what age are you talking about? 10? Okay. Do you know what I mean by the early American childhood or early American series? Okay. There's a whole set of books. When I was a boy, they were orange hardback books. Anybody remember those? And they had silhouette pictures in them, you know, just a dark silhouette were pictures. And they were childhood, books of the childhood of famous Americans. Childhood of Daniel Boone, David Crockett, George Washington, Ethan Allen, just lots of them. I mean, I read those things by the score. You know, I remember one time as a child going to the public library and bring home about 13 of those books at one time. My mother didn't like it because she's afraid she wouldn't get any work out of me. I'd just be reading all the time. But that kind of stuff, I read lots of that stuff. You know, you could give your children some of those kind of books and say, here, read this. And what it does, it takes them through the childhood. And frankly, I don't know how much of the childhood is made up and how much it's biographical, but it leads them into what the person did as an adult. Give your children some of that, for example. We get a little magazine as far as science goes. We get a little magazine from Outfit called Answers in Genesis. Answers in Genesis. And it's called Creation Ex Nihilo. That means creation from nothing. And it's a beautiful magazine. It has color pictures, and it'll go through things. It'll have an article where it talks about the giraffe, how the giraffe could not have evolved because with this long neck, he has to have special arrangements or he'd have blood pressure problems. He's got to have special pressure to get the blood up to his head, and you have to have special vascular deals to solve that problem. So you can't have the long neck without the pressure system because the thing would have died. You know, now that's for a little older children. That would be like, you know, teenagers, maybe 10 or 12 years old, 13, and on up can read that. But if you can get some of that kind of material, I think they also have one for younger ones, don't they? They have some material for younger ones. Not them. Okay. But anyway, you know, that kind of thing where you can say, here, look at what we're finding out about this. Maybe you could get it for yourself and then read portions of it and explain it. They'll love looking at the pictures even if they don't enjoy reading the thing if you read it to them and explain it. See, that kind of thing is going to be a lot more interesting in science than to just be dragging them through a burnout kind of textbook. Okay, the question is, number one, what about your child's need for other authorities so they can submit to other authorities? And number two, to make up for your deficiencies as a parent. Well, in answer to the first question is, I don't believe that's even true. I don't believe you need other authorities just to learn to submit to other authorities. I believe that if you teach your child to properly submit to his parents, learn to obey and honor his parents, learn to obey and honor God, then he will know how to submit to authorities and how not to submit to authorities. There are some authorities we should not submit to. Some authorities tell us to do things that are wrong. We should say, no way. I mean, an authority might say, social service authority might say, you may not spank your child. What do you do? You say, sorry, I guess I can't. You do what you know God wants you to do, but you do it in a discreet way. See, you don't obey that authority. And there are other authorities who tell you to do things you shouldn't do. There are some authorities who think that you should live your life by a set of rules and regulations instead of trusting Christ and his sufficiency. You don't obey that. You don't believe that. So I do not believe that you need other authorities just for the practice of learning to submit to authority. You learn to submit to the ones that God gave you and do that right. And then that will give you wisdom to learn how to submit to the other ones that will come into your life. Now, the second question, we need somebody else around to make up for the deficiencies. Well, we all understand that each of us has deficiencies. But first of all, I would like to challenge that person. Where in the Bible do you ever get the notion that you need to have some substitute parent around to make up for the deficiencies of the parent? That is totally foreign to the Bible. That's just something that somebody made up to sound reasonable to bolster their position, I think. I don't think there's a shred of truth to that. We all have deficiencies. And the way to deal with that problem is not try to import somebody else. The way to deal with that problem is get on our knees and repent of our deficiencies and ask for God's grace to deal with it. Now, I assume you were talking about character deficiencies. Is that right? Yeah. That's how you deal with it. Now, obviously, there are some things that we don't necessarily know. I mean, for example, our oldest son wants to be a missionary pilot. And in order to do that, you've got to go to airframe and mechanics school and get an airframe and mechanics license so that when you're out there in the field, you can repair your own airplane. Well, now, there's no way that I can teach him that stuff. There's no way that I can. I don't have the credentials to give him his mechanics license. But you see, that's a later stage. You know, you teach homeschool and you give them the basic background they need, and then he goes off and goes to this airframe mechanic school and works at an aircraft hangar and learns more at the aircraft hangar, by the way, than at school, and learns the things he needs to know in order to do this job that he has to have. So there are times that you will find that you can marshal someone who knows more than you on a particular subject to teach something to your child on a particular subject. But see, you're still in control of it. It's still a home school. Just like that French class that my daughter went to. What if I'd found out that French teacher was doing things in the classroom that I believed were detrimental and wrong? What could I have done the very next day? Pulled that child right out of there, and that'd been the end of that course. See, I'm still dealing with it. But I'm utilizing that skill that I don't have in order to accomplish this bigger goal. Yeah, well, you see, the question there was, do we really want our child to be taught by someone who has no character deficiencies? Now, likely that person was not saying that the other person didn't have character deficiencies. The idea was, supposedly, they have a different set than what you have. But probably most spouses, you know, have some differences, some strengths and some weaknesses. Can you start complementing each other's strengths and weaknesses so that the one spouse who's strong in one thing can help the one who's weak, the one who's weak in this can help the other? You know, why don't we start doing more of that? I think that'd be a lot more fruitful.